Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new episode of Flesh Wound Farce, where we discuss and review your and our favorite comedy films. This is the world's first and only combination trivia host and professional wrestling announcer of Chilean descent that currently resides in Southern California, Ozzy V. And with me as always on this program, first in the Northern Bay Area, is Greg. How you doing, Greg?
Ozzy, I'm fantastic. It's been a good day. Have a good beer. How about yourself, my friend?
I was happy that there was still another week where the Raiders didn't have to play football. I felt that coming. But, you know,
I love that I'm getting to that point where I've said it enough where you punish yourself preemptively. Yeah. And that's my goal in life.
Yeah, well, there it goes. But anyway, that's that. Todd, how are you doing? Fleshwood producer Todd.
I am chilling as usual. How about yourself?
Usual. I'm doing fantastic. If I could just jump into football real quick. The fact that Aaron Rodgers and the stupid Green Bay Packers are no longer in the postseason we almost had a Packers versus Chiefs Super Bowl, which is one of the worst Super Bowl combinations you can have. The last worst Super Bowl combination were the Packers and the Steelers. I didn't care who won. I wanted a blimp to crash into the stadium, and the following year we'd only have 30 teams to worry about. But fortunately, that didn't happen. This year, unfortunately, I got to root for Tom Brady because I don't want the Chiefs to win a Super Bowl, but whatever. At least that would be the first time a team has hosted the Super Bowl in their city and they could win it. F*** the Chiefs. You can bleep that out.
Okay.
Yeah. It just kind of seemed like natural to say that. Anyhow, this week you see me in a toga because we reviewed the classic Animal House. But before we get to that main event, we do have the commercial of the week. I chose, Todd, if you would do the honors of airing this piece of work. Baby, let's cruise away from here. You're gonna fly away. Glad you're going my way. When you drive this smooth, you save with Allstate. The future of auto insurance is here. You've never been in better hands. Allstate. Click or call for a quote today. All right. Now, I apologize for the individuals that are listening to this podcast rather than the video version. However, just to give a brief rundown, this shows two astronauts driving one of those moon vehicles. And towards the end, you see a cell phone float out of the astronaut's right sleeve. And then you see the phone shows the Allstate app showing how much they're saving with safe driving. Whew. There was like one after the other thing that hit for me. I'm just going to say one because I don't want to take all the things wrong with this commercial. First thing I noticed is that you're telling me that an astronaut, when leaving their space shuttle, is going to take their cell phone with them. That's going to be the first thing I say. And I don't know if you guys are going to cover the others, but the first thing I'll say, the likelihood of an astronaut. Oh, you know what? Before we go out, let me bring my phone. I have these giant gloves, so it doesn't recognize my fingerprint. I can't unlock it, even if I wanted to take a picture. That's my thing. I don't think an astronaut would bring their phone on the moon. Greg, what about you?
To be fair, I do have to say, like, I don't think you're worried about anyone stealing your phone, so maybe you wouldn't lock it. And also the fact that, what kind of cell reception are you getting up there? I mean, I have a tough time getting cell phone reception around the Bay Area, so to have it up there.
Now, the one counterpoint, I guess you could say, is when you see the phone, you're actually able to see a Wi-Fi signal at full strength. So you'd mean to tell me that these space shuttles have the built-in Wi-Fi, but where's the... Todd?
MOO spills moon.
Wow.
See, no one gets the reference. It's all right. Anyone? No?
Sorry?
It's a reference to The Stand, the Stephen King.
Oh, okay.
It's novels, miniseries. Yeah. That's okay. The dumb guy says MOO. I don't know how to say it, be politically correct.
I got what you're saying.
I do have to say, though, between so I've been talking with Ozzy throughout the day because of football, and he didn't want the Packers to win, didn't want the Chiefs to win, and again brings up an insurance commercial. Ozzy, I think you have a problem with insurance in general.
No, here's the stupid problem with these insurance company commercials, and I'm going to continue going after them. Now, listen, I've said before, these Geico commercials, I can't really go after because they make entertaining commercials. But for a stupid company who makes its money by people paying them a certain amount per month that they're not always paying back, oh, it goes into their fund. They're insurance companies. They have all this money to blow on advertising, apparently. And this is the stuff they're going to put out? You're going to give me 30 seconds of your time? You want to pitch your product to me? Give me something to watch.
It's okay.
No, it's not okay. I mean, come on. How do insurance companies have a marketing budget that large? Anyway,
and yet Anaheim Hills BMW or whatever it was does not.
Apparently, I don't know. I'm lost. That was a little pocket of rage that I wasn't expecting to jump into so much tonight. But Greg knows me well enough. How it's like you know what I think these pockets of rage. Imagine being on like a lake of ice. And it's already cracked, and the ice breaking would be a representation of my rant or anger starting. And Greg just knows where to hit so all the ice break. Like, he just knows exactly where. And it... Well, I'm glad now that to be in a better mood, I get to talk about this classic. That is National Lampoon's Animal House, released in 1978 with a runtime of approximately an hour and 48 minutes, directed by Todd's favorite director, John Landis, and also written by Harold Ramis, Chris Miller, and Douglas Kenny. Todd, I know last time when we reviewed a John Landis film, it was Trading Places.
Yes. And
leading up to Trading Places, oh, I can't wait to give my grap against John Landis. And Trading Places came and Trading Places went. We didn't get your gripe against John Landis. So do you want to do this now, or do we want to go through some initial thoughts first?
Yeah, it's more of a downer. So,
okay, good. So then I will start, I guess, more in the upper category, because what this film felt like, I mean, if you take a show like The Mandalorian or actually I should say The A-Team was like it was a TV show, but each episode felt like a movie. And you could say the same for Mandalorian and tons of other shows, but there's some shows that each show feels like its own separate movie. And Greg is upset with my opinion. Apparently he just took off, but anyway, back to it. This movie felt like binge watching three episodes of a TV show, three or four episodes of a TV show all in one, where like there was gags throughout, and it just felt more like a fun movie as opposed to like aiming to get like a really funny ha-ha moment. This just felt like an hour and 43 minute sketch or a series of sketches, so to speak. And in one of the documentaries, John Landis actually speaks of it as though he was filming a documentary about Delta House. Because while the movie was released in 1978, it is set in 1962. And actually, before I go on to Greg for his initial thoughts, perhaps I should go over the synopsis just in case anybody out there has not seen or is not familiar. So I got, I'll read an excerpt of the back of the DVD because it's a 30th anniversary edition. So there's a lot of other stuff mixed in. So I'll just read this quick excerpt that reads, John Landis directs the legendary John Belushi as John Bluto Blutarski in this outrageous spoof of 1960s campus life. Follow the uproarious adventures of the Delta House fraternity as they take on Dean Wormer in the sanctimonious Omegas and the entire female student body. That last one didn't seem much of an accurate representation of the film, but the first two definitely. And this is, well, I'll go into the cast a little bit later because there's a little bit of backstory behind that. But Greg, initial thoughts.
Initial thoughts. I remember watching this movie before. Be honest, didn't remember enjoying it when I watched it last. But I do have to say, and I think this is partly attributed to me now being a married man and no longer being in a lot of these lifestyles that I got to watch, it really did feel like a throwback to a lot of my time in Southern California. And so it felt nice to watch. I really enjoyed the film.
And Todd, initial thoughts. If you want to jump into your downer, that's fine.
No, I'll say
initial thoughts.
Well, I have a similar thing with Greg. I've always wanted, last time I watched it, I was like, I did not like it. I don't know if it's the same reason, the throwback element, but I definitely did like it a lot more. My only thing is it still made me want to watch what I feel are better 80s comedy college movies. So it's
there wasn't enough nudity for you, was there, Todd?
No, I'm not you're thinking of the guy that used to be on this previous show.
Oh, right.
No, there was enough for me. But yeah, it did make me want to watch, I'll say, Revenge of the Nerds. It is okay. my favorite college comedy. But
or Van Wilder.
That's another great one too. There you go. It's in your head now.
That's going to be another conversation for another day.
But I can see why so many people do gravitate to this. Like if I was a little bit older, it probably would have been hit me at the right time. I still kind of think the ending's a bit of a mess, but it's a fun ride.
Well, as the movie, the movie itself as a movie alone is very questionable with the things that happen. You have, not to say like a warning, but something bad happens to the fraternity. And the first they think, hey, he gave us a warning. Let's throw a toga party. That doesn't make sense, but it in the land of parody or land of sketch comedy, it fit for me. And hence why I'm wearing the toga. And then further on, they get some more bad news and they go to a road trip to pick up some women that they've never met. I will say what's fun with this is that when they were talking about the characters, they intended to write them as archetypes. And this practically had no budget. So you had a lot of people that were unknown, or you had, in the appearance order, this was Kevin Bacon's first movie. He was 18 years old at the time. And you also had Karen Allen, one of her first roles. Tim Matheson plays the role of Otter, which, by the way, Greg, as an archetype, you're the one that is most like, there were some things that Otter was doing. It was like, man, that feels so much like Greg. It's the Bugs Bunny element. Like he's the Bugs Bunny character of the film. And Greg, I think that was it. And it was actually Donald Sutherland being the one guy to agree to it that actually got it greenlit by Universal. Universal was actually the last studio to accept it. In fact, Warner Brothers said it'll never get made. And people at Universal actually got it or accepted it without reading it, according to the documentary.
Well, so, I do have, sorry to interrupt, but I just want to say thank you for saying that because there is a character named Greg in that film. And I'm glad that you associated me with a different character than the one actually named Greg, who's quite the douche.
part of the Omega fraternity. Yes, absolutely. Now, in terms of a favorite scene, I'll say this favorite scene right now is, there's a moment when they need to get motivated. And Blutarsky, John Belushi's character, stands in the middle and says, was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? It wasn't that because that's funny alone. But the follow-up of like you're laughing at that, and then you have one person turn to another and say, Germans? Forget it, he's rolling. And just the straight-faced, this happens all the time, just let him go. That made me laugh more. It was like such like a quick 1-2. Wasn't expecting it. That my favorite line and scene. Just, it was great. What about you guys?
So I am so, so happy that you said that as your favorite line, because when I watched that scene, I was like, I've had moments like that with Ozzy where he gets on his rants and I'm just like, man, he's not a good one. Just let him go. But my favorite scene or joke in that film is part of that mess of the end. That moment where there's some carnage happening, and then a woman dressed like a bunny flies through the air and into this young boy's window and room where he's reading a Playboy. And that would have been great enough, his shock and surprise. But he looks up and he goes, thank you, God.
Just great stuff. Yeah. Another like 1-2 type thing where the gag by itself is great, but then you add that more. It's like adding cheese on a burger.
Right.
Todd?
Okay. Well, I have a favorite bit. I'm going to ask you first, Ozzy. Do you know what my favorite bit is?
Oh, Bluto looking at the camera after What's-Her-Face takes her bra off?
No, that was a nice little bit. My favorite bit was the angel of the devil on the shoulders. I was dying.
I knew that was going to be your favorite. Like, when I just knew it, I was like, that's... Yeah. And I wondered, is he going to quote the devil on the podcast?
I'm just saying as what I said, so.
Man. So, before, actually... I'm going to ask you guys real quick. You want to get into the ratings right now? I mean, I got a bunch of stuff that I wanted to share from the mockumentary and documentary. Do you want to go into ratings right now or save the endings for the end?
We'll rate it then go into that, I think.
Okay. Now, So to start things off, I said, like, as a movie by itself, if you weren't just looking at this as a comedy, I'd probably give it, like, maybe, like, a 2.5 or a 3. But if in the lens of... This is just fun. Like, I just want to hang out with these guys. Like, through start to finish, like, there was no, like I said, like, oh my God, I'm in tears just because of this one moment. It was just like, it was just a good time from start to finish. I wanted to see what was going to happen next. And because I was so drawn into that, I had to give it a 5 because it, like, I was just so drawn to all these characters and how everybody was interacting with another and just, I wanted more. It wasn't one of these, you know, sometimes you get to a slow part in a movie and you like look at your watch to see how much is left. But this, it was just a fun movie to just sit down and like binge watching like 4 episodes of a comedy, just let it go. It was very therapeutic. So I'd have to say as a comedy, just straight up as a fun comedy film, I'd have to give it a 5.
You know, that's, I had a tough time kind of rating this because like part of me has to think about what we've rated on other films before. And I'm trying to like keep it in perspective with those.
Well, I'm glad you're doing
it. So like it was tough for me to say, oh, this is as good as, you know, Hear No Evil, See No Evil. You know, so it's like it was difficult because I really, really, really did enjoy this. But I agree with you comedy-wise, 2.5 or so. Because it only had its moments, but it was
movie-wise, 2.5 or so. But the comedy side. Because I said movie-wise, 2.5, 3, but you know, the lens of parody comedy, it's a 5.
So I'm the other way around then. Because comedy-wise, it wasn't super, it wasn't like laugh out loud funny most of the time. It had its moments for sure, but it was just fun to go through. So like as a whole movie. I really enjoyed it, though. It was fun to, like, have that feeling of those times again. So for me, I have to say, as a movie, it was a 4. As a comedy, 2.5, 3, because it didn't have a lot of moments. But when they hit very well.
I see. Todd?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle of you two. Like, I think on both sides. Like, it wasn't laugh a minute. But it all came together well. Like I told you guys before, I wasn't looking forward to this one because my last song was just like, but I actually ended up having fun with it. And I think it earns a 4 for me too.
Interesting. And maybe there's like, I guess a better way to describe like the rating system. Best example I can give, in the former GamePro magazine, when they used to review games, they wouldn't just give it a flat out number. They had like graphics is this, sound is this, controls is this, and fun factor is this. So like we, as we're talking about like movies or whatever, you know, like as a movie and as a comedy, I'll say for the term of fun factor, that's where I'm at, is a 5.
Yeah.
Is that it was definitely fun all the way through. It maybe literally funny, as it's just funny all the way through. Todd, downer now or after these fun facts?
You really want me to get to this downer?
I'm really curious because I'm curious if it's this, if it's what it could be. I'm thinking of because of well, what
it like has nothing. It has nothing to do with this pervert son though. So we'll get that out of the way. We'll not talk about Max Landis.
Okay. But, not that I was thinking about, like, oh, maybe he's going to bring up Max Landis, because I know who that is.
He was a big deal for a minute until. Anyway, we'll talk about John, Murderer of Three. So do you not know the Twilight Zone, the movie story?
Oh.
While filming Twilight Zone, the movie, there's a stunt that needs to be performed with Vic Morrow and two children. Okay. Problem was the shoot was at night, so he basically got two children to work when they shouldn't be. And not only that, I do not believe they were U.S. citizens. And they were supposed to be I don't think it was Vietnam, but they were, you know, Asian children, and their parents were there. So there's a big scene with the helicopter, and I don't know if you've ever seen footage of John Landis directing, which you might have just seen. He's like super into it, and he just doesn't give a shit. So basically he wasn't happy with the explosions. So he told them bigger explosions, and he wanted the helicopter closer. So basically the helicopter was too close, and even the fire marshal was like, he didn't stop it, but he should have. And it blew what's the back part of the helicopter called? The
tail.
Well, yeah, there we go. The tail, it spin down. And literally, the two children and Vic Morrow slit in half.
Holy Toledo!
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and then there was a huge trial about it too. Twilight Zone.
When did this happen? What year?
1983.
Okay.
Was when the movie came out. I think it said a bit, and that was produced by, Steven Spielberg. Other directors were Joe Dante.
Kind of like a four rooms kind of deal where each director did a clip or a scene.
It's an anthology. I believe there was three or four different stories, and three or four different directors. Four, pretty sure.
Got it.
And if you watch that episode in it, you can see how disjointed it is. So,
That was after this movie was made.
Yes.
What's also great about this specific, I don't mean to really try and sell anything because nobody's paying us for this, but if you do have an opportunity to see this 30th anniversary edition 2-disc available anywhere and you're interested about what the special features are, it comes with two very fun bonus features I got to watch. First one was a mockumentary that did like a Where Are They Now as their characters. And you had Otter, when they visited him, it was actually Tim Matheson as a gynecologist in a doctor's office. And then he, you know, you see a patient open the door, she's in lingerie, and she says, "I'm ready for my exam." And, you know, they close the door. And in one of the subsequent clips, you just see a shot of the office and you just hear, "Could you move to the left?" Referencing another line he made in the movie, but probably one of the things that made me laugh incredibly hard was Hoover. What's great about the at the end of the movie, during the credits, they show what they went on and did. So it kind of carries off what that had said. Like, so for example, it said Hoover was he became a public defender in Baltimore, Maryland. And when they updated him, he's in this law office. And he said, "I had a client that was on trial for stealing dentures. And when they had found his apartment, they found 40,000 teeth. And it was at that moment that I came to the realization that my clients probably shouldn't be on the street. So I made a call, and now I'm assistant to the DA. And it like, he played it so well. Like, you can tell that all these guys had a blast jumping right into their characters, and even had Karen Allen being Katie and Peter Reigert showing up as Boone again. And they had a thing where they talked about how many, like, they got divorced twice, they got married three times. And that stuff was just fun to see. And some great bits about the mockumentary. When it came to the actual documentary, that's when stuff really got interesting. National Lampoon's was, you know, its own magazine, nothing really major. This was the first movie they had ever done. And what was interesting is you had Chris Miller, one of the writers of the magazine, approach Marty Simmons, saying, one of the producers of the film, but head of National Lampoon, saying he wants to leave. So he just said, no, you can't leave. We're going to do a movie. He just said that just right off because he knew he would keep the writer. He said, oh, okay, we're going to do a movie. Awesome. I would love to write a movie. So they got Chris Miller and Harold Ramis started working on what turned out to be a high school movie. It was like Laser Girl Patrols. You know, it was not looking good. So they brought in Douglas Kenny. And funny thing, Douglas Kenny and Chris Miller actually in the movie as Stork and Hardbar. So that was funny to see that. But that's after Douglas Kenny came on. That's when it, transformed into this college comedy where they wrote archetypes for people. And they didn't want to have, specific characters. They just want to have these archetypes. And when it came to the cast, because they had no budget, they had to go with these no-name people. So Stephen Furst was on there playing Flounder. Mark Metcalf as Doug Niedermeyer, which I first saw him in One Crazy Summer. You know, now that was something that he had done before. Again, I had mentioned earlier, John Belushi, Kevin Bacon, Karen Allen, and Tim Matheson, Peter Reigert as well. Now, they might not all have had stunning success following that, but one could argue this was probably a pretty big launching point for Karen Allen, starring in Starman and then Raiders of the Lost Ark following. And I had mentioned Donald Sutherland joining the cast. That was ultimately what got it greenlit at Universal. But now a great thing about the location is that they had approached all these colleges across the nation, and each college would read the script and be like, there's no way you're filming this here. And good luck, right? Getting that filmed anywhere. Now, here's what's great about the story of why the University of Oregon was chosen, or rather, why it was available. So the dean of the University of Oregon was originally approached with a film about a college student. And when he read the script, the dean themselves said, this is ridiculous. It'll never be, actually released. That movie was The Graduate. very similar to how like Disney turned down Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter and they just snatched up Narnia like that. When he heard about Animal House and was approached about Animal House, he said yes without even reading the script. And once they got the location, hilarious thing was that they had the Delta cast all arrive to the location 5 days before, and they all stayed at one hotel, right? And the camaraderie got to a point where they did all this rehearsing. They started being these characters. And they'd actually, there's like a standing piano in the lobby of the hotel. And they actually moved it to Bruce McGill's room, who played D-Day. And you had the actual hotel staff to be like, no, you can't move it. And be like, no, we're fine. Nobody plays this. It's good. And they just went up to move it to this guy's room. And they would actually party in D-Day or Bruce McGill's room D-Day when they weren't filming. And then when the Deltas arrived, the people in the Omegas arrived, this is where you had, as Greg mentioned, a guy playing Greg was James Daunton, also Kevin Bacon, Mark Metcalf. When they arrived, they arrived after the fact. And you had like this, it was the Omegas and the Deltas that actually jumped out of the screen and was actually like, so when it came time for lunch breaks, you would have the Omegas sitting with each other and you'd have the Deltas sitting with each other. So I think that added to another level of sort of realism to the whole thing. And the while the guys up, the guys from Delta came in 5 days before, they had actually attended a frat party in the neighborhood. And they went to a fraternity that was similar to the Delta House. And then they went to a party that was similar to the Omega House. So they're at this Omega House and they kind of see that the party's really upstairs, right? But there's still some people in the lower level that, like, I guess pregame, whatever you want to say. So when they're going up to the stairs, it's the guy who plays Hoover, James Widows, who's told by one of the people that's watching the stairs, like, hey, you can't go up there. Somebody's up there for you. Well, if once they realize you're not with them, they'll come down for you. Right. So they're all waiting in, you know, below, waiting for somebody to get them or trying to see if they can get upstairs. And then they're kind of feeling like this vibe that nobody wants them there. So they start to leave. Right. And just as the guy playing Hoover, James Widows, is about to leave, some guy says, bye, asshole, or something like that. Right. So he tips the drink up. And the beer splashes on the dude's face and a fight ensues. Like, literally, he's talking about Boone was thrown through the window and Tim Matheson and me are like on the floor and we're trying to get up. And we're thinking that if we just stand up, they'll let us walk away. They weren't letting us get up. We literally had to run. They had to run from one of these parties because they were getting the shit kicked out of them because they, you know, it was exactly like they describe it in the movie. It exactly happened to them in this thing. And he said that really helped, I think, with the camaraderie of everybody. And it was such a fun story to hear. And the last fact I'll bring up, the guy who wrote the score, Elmer Bernstein, who was more of a dramatic composer, John Landis sent him a copy and wanted him to score it. And he said, I don't know why you wanted to do it. Asked me to do this. And Landis had told him, I want you to score it like a serious dramatic film. That's what he did. And then Elmer Bernstein went on to score Airplane, Ghostbusters 3, Migos, Stripes, among many others, including Trading Places, Todd's favorite. So those are just some of the facts that I wanted to share from the documentary. I thought was really interesting to hear. To be honest, I watched these right after I was done with the movie because I kind of didn't want the movie to end. I wanted it to keep going. So that was just some things I wanted to share with you guys. So that's all I got for Animal House. Anything else you guys wanted to add?
Yeah, I do have one thing that I thought about actually as we were doing this podcast. I think there's a plot hole in the movie. Not that I think they were trying to be super deep with it or anything, but there's a character who is revealed to be underage, which you kind of see coming in the film. Like, but from our standards, I was thinking they were going to say, oh, she's 16 or whatever. But they say she's 13 years old, which I was like, I don't believe that girl is 13. But that being said, she was also working at a grocery store. And I'm pretty sure child labor laws make it so that the minimum working age is 15. But I don't know if it was different in 1963.
Yeah. I was thinking it was her parents' store.
Could be. But her
dad was the mayor.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
Now, do you guys remember who she was? Because we talked about it in Caddyshack.
Yes, she was the girl in Caddyshack. The one who had an Irish accent to start, and then it just went away towards the end. Yes. Now, if you are interested in watching this film, or just want to watch it again, it is available on Hulu, and I believe the Showtime app, Todd, is that correct?
Close. It's Shudder. Jeez, now I'm screwing up. It's... Showtime and Cinemax.
Showtime and Cinemax. And I do also see it available here under the premium subscription of Hulu. Now, what, Todd?
No, I'm going to say that's if you have Showtime or Cinemax on. That's if you have Showtime or...
Oh, I see. Well, there you go. Wouldn't you know who won the pony? Anyway, so that is all we have for Animal House. Definitely recommend it, regardless if you haven't seen it. And even if you haven't seen it in a while, watch it again. Now, next week, we will be back with a new episode, and we're going to be discussing the classic Coen Brothers movie, The Big Lebowski. So fun. I can't wait to check that out and revisit that. And in case you were listening to the audio version and were wondering what the hell we're talking about with the video version, that is fleshwoundfeatures.com. No, it's blogtalkradio.com/fleshwoundfeatures. And you could also subscribe to the Patreon page, patreon.com/ flesh wound features. And if you're listening to the video, yeah, there's an audio version as well that you can get wherever you enjoy your favorite podcasts. And you can find myself, Todd, or Greg on social, the social medias. Guys, I think I'm good. Anything else you guys got? Todd, what are you doing on Flesh Wound Horror?
Your hair's all jacked up. That's
I was waiting for you to say it.
Because I had to move the headphones and messed up my hair. I'm not happy about it, but I see we're almost done. Todd, what are you doing on Flesh Wound Horror?
Right now on Patreon, we got a Final Destination series retrospective. I believe this Wednesday we have a Carnosaur series retrospective. We're getting ready to do our Giallo countdown. That's Giallo. They're Italian murder mysteries with high gore content.
There's always room for Giallo.
Yes. I'm not going to use that on the show.
Oh, no. That's something only I could use, apparently.
Yeah. Too corny for me. Now I'm going to name the series that.
There you go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we hope you enjoyed this episode. And again, we will be back next week. A new episode of Flesh Wound Farce. That's Greg, that's Todd, and I'm Ozzy B. See you next week, right here on Flesh Wound Farce.